It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along as well, and Daniel is continuing his very interesting discussion of sex in the context of marriage. And last week we kind of got into the cost of sexual perversion on society and marriage, and you kind of want to continue along those themes and maybe offer some solutions too, though.
Yeah, we've this is our fifth in the miniseries, and I'm going to try to wrap it up today, and I want to end up by giving some people, just giving the folks some ways of kind of the reality of actually trying to address it and what that might look like. I wanted to start off by clarifying again. It just seems like this whole area of sex and sex in marriage has been so cloudy that every time we've done one in this series, we've started off by clarifying something. So, sexual compromise for the person, for the married couple, for the man, the wife that realizes that's going on. We don't realize that sexual compromise is shame based, and this kind of gets back to some of the costs we've talked about. But it's actually a response to a belief that life doesn't really have a transcendent purpose or a higher purpose in that, or that there is a purpose in, my life. If there is a purpose in my life, I won't fulfill it. So it's kind of a shame-based thing, if you can kind of connect the dots there. Like any addiction, it's a reach for value, control, and power. And we sort of wind up in addictions when we don't find healthy ways to grow our world, and our world gets smaller, and it gets more selfish, and it gets more self-centered, and we don't look beyond ourselves. Our purpose isn't in someone else, and I say someone else, and certainly our purpose can't be vested in Christ if it's vested in myself. So shame is, of course, that internalized message of lack of worth. And so when we have a lot of shame like that, we reach out in healthy ways. We would reach out to accomplish things or to serve other people, but in unhealthy ways, we would reach out for immediate gratification in some ways. Mm. And of course, sex is highly gratifying. And so that's kind of one of the things that we'd reach out for. It's sexual compromise is a retreat. Isn't it, from that sense of that call to greater good and a higher purpose? And I can actually feel that when I think of sexual compromise, that it's almost like any sin that we, David speaks about presumptuous sins, anything that we're engaged in, and we sort of have a hunch it's probably not okay, with
well, you
God.
Say here, you say here, it's it leads to the basic idea of calling it quits.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what do you mean by that? Sexual compromise, and
but because you let's say for the Christian, it has a for the Christian, it has a or for maybe the non-Christian too. There can be in the person's mind a sense of purpose in life or a quest. But what any addiction does, whether it's gambling or alcohol or sex, any addiction, any behavior that I'm engaged in at the cost of this higher goal, I can just feel myself calling it quits. Mm. An example that I have of my from my own life is a lot of times early in my life when I was just starting to get jobs and things, I would I'd be quickly promoted, but I'd be promoted beyond my level of confidence, and so I'd sort of self-sabotage that. I could feel myself doing it, coming back late from lunch, leaving a little early, and at some level, I knew what I was doing. I was calling it quits. I didn't want to be promoted anymore. I didn't want to go any further, and so...
So at the base of that is shame.
It's shame, an internalized message of lack of worth, and there isn't a purpose here, and if it is, I'm not going to fulfill it. I'm not going to be able to fulfill it. So, yeah, we call it quits, and we don't all call it quits at the same altitude going up this climb, but regardless, it's behavioral compromise is in fact, calling it quits. And then, as I say, for Christians, it's even more profound because for the Christian, it's a response to the belief, whether cognizant or not, that, that God is distant. And you can, you know, if you're involved in sexual compromise, you can feel that when you're thinking about pornography or you're compromising the marriage bed, you have to put God at a distance. And so it's, it's kind of like what the other side of that is, that I get involved in those things because, you know, let's face it, if you really thought that God was watching what you did, you wouldn't do most of the things you do anyway, right. You know? So it's kind of a response to that deep belief that God is distant, that he's not personal, that he's not concerned for me or the details of my life. He doesn't really have a plan for my life. You know, maybe I'm just one of the insignificant speck in an infinite population.
Wasn't there a song about that? God is watching us from a distance.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He's actually not from a distance at all. He's right there.
Yeah. Right there. Yeah, mediocrity gets to be just kind of what's expected. You know, again, it's almost like when we stand before God someday, we'll just shrug our shoulders and look down at our feet, and I'll just give the same answer everybody else is giving because I've had this sense that, well, he wasn't in my life, and then maybe at the end I find out he actually was, and there was I have a sense of something I should fulfill in my life and want to fulfill in my life. And sometimes it's difficult for us to keep our eye on that and really believe that God also wants me to fulfill that. And that's his challenge to me. So sometimes it's easy to kind of say, oh, maybe that's just in my mind, and then go ahead and take these avenues to self immediate gratification. You know, sexual activity has been referred to as kind of the meeting place of neurological reward. It satiates the brain, the body, and the imagination. So we, you know, it's easy to default into sexual behavior when all else fails to satisfy. And so in that way, sex is often an anger behavior, and it's not love, and it's pretty much the opposite.
Anger behavior toward yourself?
Anger behavior, it'd be toward myself and toward other people. You know, anger being fear-shame-based mechanism associated with the gain or loss of value, control, and power, which we've talked about before. So, sex can actually be can easily be a reach for value, control, and power, and that fear and shame-based, and that it is an anger behavior, and you wouldn't think of it as an anger behavior. But think of what's going on when you mix anger and sex. That's a really bad combination.
Yeah. Well, how unhealthy sex brings about relational distance and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you mean by this.
Yeah. There's a cycle. Let's call it the cycle of relational distance and sexual perversion. And it starts off with me first, my needs. I need to survive. And that's the base of all of our human behaviors. Down there somewhere, behavior is ultimately about survival. That's our basic animal instinct. Even sexual behavior and sexual gratification, if we talked about it long enough, we'd get down to that fact that it's about survival. And we can think of that as value, control, and power. And so I have to survive at all costs, which means that you have to be second. I got to be first, you got to be second. So I'm going to use that other person to give me value, control, and power. So I always have to feel above that other person. So let's say in the case of a husband, which is often really where the cycle is centered, because the man is naturally the initiator. It's hard for the woman to initiate that act simply because of our anatomy. So that's kind of where the cycle is centered. And so the man is then naturally he's going to be condescending and disrespectful, taking the wife for granted, despising her. That word despising, interesting word. It means to think over or think around. And we oftentimes think of despising as having some sinister. It doesn't necessarily. It might begin very innocently, with just thinking over or thinking around, just not aware of you. I mean, you're talking to me, but I'm looking around you. Your vote doesn't exactly count. Your opinion isn't exact. It's going to be weighted, by despising. And so if the husband is in that, my needs first, I got to survive, then he's going to be condescending. Well, why is he going to be condescending? Because he's got to be above. So he's got to put the other person below. So I have to be condescending. I have to be disrespectful, because if I'm not, and this person rises up to my equal, That's going to wreak havoc on my sexual enjoyment.
Mm-hmm. It's not, but this is very vice versa. This goes both ways.
It does go both ways. I say it's generally centered in the man, but yeah, and typically when I see it going the other way, it's typically quite often, which, what do you want, typically or quite often? Anyway, it's a gal that's been, had a kind of a rough growing up, mm-hmm. because women ideally are more nurturing, more relationally caring.
They want centered. That relationship to succeed.
Yeah, and they're more mm-hmm. other-centered mm-hmm. by nature. So in turn, what happens is this, what I've just talked about, this despising and devaluing, it kind of sets up that whole sadistic tone, satisfaction by control, arousal by being in control and kind of inflicting pain. As again, it doesn't have to be physical pain. It can just be disrespect or those kinds of things. Since then, since that then becomes the new watermark of sexual reward, the husband can't afford to show respect in any part of the relationship because see, then that would conflict with the sadistic narrative. That would conflict with that narrative of I get gratification by being in control. I get gratification by being the one of value. I get, and so it that would undermine the sexual satisfaction. And so here's what happens is the less he values her, the more he enjoys sex. And as you pointed out, it can be conversely too, or it can be vice versa. The woman, the less she respects actually him and herself, the more she enjoys sex. And then conversely, the more he enjoys sex, the less he values her. And again, masochism is the mirror of that, you know. So it can happen to where the less the woman respects herself and then by axiom, the husband, the more she enjoys sex. And the more she enjoys sex, the less she can afford to. So, you know, we see these things at, you know, social settings. We see husbands and wives bantering and, you know, sometimes it's fun. And then sometimes it gets a little bit rough and somebody gets hurt. And, you know, as a counselor and doing what I do, I just look at that and I know that, you know, they can't be making love in the bedroom. They just can't be because they're not making it out here in the open.
Honoring each other. Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to talk in our next segment, family of origin a little bit, mm-hmm, and then also how to deal with one spouse who is more into sex than the other, and
how
to balance that out.
Quite
maybe.
Often the case, yeah.
Okay. Right. Interesting discussion this week, sex in the context of marriage with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. If people need some help with their marital issues or any other kind of counseling issues, how do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
By phone at 425-778-6169, by email through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
And these shows are podcasts as well there at your website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. We'll be back with more of Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Christian marriages are being attacked as never before, from outside and from within. Today more than ever before, you have to be proactive, learning to better be aware, to be more caring, and to be better communicators, recognizing and dealing with problems that are from within, from without, personal or relational. And that's where I can help you. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along as well this week, continuing our discussion of sex in the context of marriage. Daniel, you wanted to kind of get into, now this kind of throws me, I see it here, foo. But foo means...
Yeah, it's not Chinese food.
Yeah,
it's
family of origin and how that affects healthy or unhealthy sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Yes, family of origin issues and why some people are more prone toward sexual perversion or more prone to resist sexual activity than others. So let's start with generational dysfunctions, you know, of all kinds. So great-granddad, granddad, or great-grandma, grandma, you know, I've had situations where, you know, I had a situation once where I had a client whose grandmother was raped in the First World War and whose mother was raped in the Second World War. And then, you know, she comes along and she, you know, so for generations, there has been this breakdown in relationship between men and women. and a lot of fear and a lot of insecurity. And so then when she goes out to, you know, meet the right guy, she can't find the right guy. All she can find is the wrong guy.
Mm. So how would she pass that on then to her kids or her daughter?
Simply by not finding the right guy. Then the child
it's constantly
will,
modeled.
Yeah, the child will not have modeled for. Now there are good things that this mother could model, even if she were single. She could model great things. She could find mentors, healthy mentors. So she could, you know, it wouldn't be total loss, but that next generation, her children, will still struggle a little bit, and they might go into marriage being happily married but without a lot of sex, because that might be an area where they just wouldn't feel comfortable. And why would they feel uncomfortable? Because we intuit some things about our parents that we never cognitively know. Mm. And so a child could intuit from a mother that the mother is for some reason uncomfortable around men. And so the daughter would also have this discomfort around men, which she probably wouldn't be able to explain herself. But she might wind up marrying a man who's the flip side of this, who has a little bit of insecurities about women. And so they might have a relationship, they might have a marriage that has a certain dysfunction, but it works. And in fact, that's the story of all marriages. We all, you know, we all have a crutch and we all have a broken limb. So. Mm-hmm. Generational dysfunctions, relational distances and abuse, which that's kind of redundant. Addictions in generations, because addictions, what addictions are they are behaviors that make you psychologically and emotionally unavailable, because it's all about you. So you're not psychologically and emotionally unavailable to your children. And so they're going to grow up with that lack. An absent parent is kind of a family of origin issue that can lead to that.
Because absent fathers.
Absent fathers, mm-hmm. because absent fathers, absent mothers, because this is where the child growing up gets a sense of all rightness. The girl has to see the father interacting in healthy ways with mother in order for the girl to love her own feminineness. Mm. And the father has to respond to her in a way that respects the fact that she's a woman and loves that in order for the girl to grow up satisfied. This is where a lot of the homosexual problem comes from, in this kind of family of origin breakdown. I've got some examples here. I had a client many, many years ago who was talking to me about depression and anxiety and things like that. And she happened to bring up, I asked her a little bit about her family of origin, and she brought up I think the first thing out of her mouth was, well, we were a kind of a really open family. My parents always walked around in their underwear, which, you know, our conversation wasn't going in that direction at all. We were talking about, and so the fact that she would bring that up, that was significant. I had a friend who was traveling business one time, and he had a buddy who had been going through a divorce, and as he was passing through this guy's town, the guy said, you know, good to see you, had some dinner, why don't you spend the night at my place? So he did. So in the morning, his friend that he's staying with is up and getting his children ready to go to school. So he's walking back and forth in front of the bedroom door, and he doesn't have any clothes on. He's completely nude, and he's getting his, and said, do you think there's something wrong with that? Yeah, I think there's probably some boundaries that are missing there. Jokes, off-color jokes, and just disrespect in subtle ways. You know, you hear women saying, oh, men are like that, or men saying, you know, you can't understand women, don't even try. Abuse of all kinds, emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, having porn lying around. We talked about that.
Just I was going to mention, sometimes maybe a family is doing everything right, but then because of our society, something is interjected mm-hmm. for the first time, like porn or the alternative mm-hmm. of maybe mm-hmm. being homosexual. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of like these onslaughts that would that mm-hmm. not be a family of origin. Will those things only find a latch in that family because there is some kind of dysfunction already?
Yeah,
or can this stuff interject a dysfunction into a...
They will find... It's kind of like they will find a foothold if they're not... If if there's too much, if they're not dealt with correctly, i.e., all of the above, if there's distance, if the parents bring into their relationship some reluctance to deal with sexual things. So it reminds me also of a situation which can actually initiate things like incest. Let's just say, for example, something as innocent as a family that had a lot of kids and only one bedroom, and so they put up a partition, a curtain or something, and kids being kids, the kids are growing up and they get a little curious, so they're peeking through the curtain, watching each other dress, and so you say, well, that's pretty innocent, that's just curiosity, that may not go anywhere, doesn't need to go anywhere if the parents handle it correctly.
Right.
But if the parents don't handle it correctly, that can be the baseline of the next generation, to where that's the norm, and then going beyond peeking, you see, so it can start innocently.
Well, we're kind of switching gears here a little bit now. You wanted to address and give some people some pointers on how to deal with it when one spouse is more into sex than the other. Mm-hmm. And that's a real practical, I guess you could say, problem that causes some stress in a marriage. What are some tips here?
In fact, it's almost... You can almost count on it that even when the husband and wife would report, yeah, we're both satisfied, they don't mean the same thing. You know, they're coming from two different directions. Mm-hmm. So, or I'd ask the husband, you know, well, is your wife comfortable in the sex? Oh, yeah, she's fine. You know, have you ever asked her? No. You know, or, you know, so even though people say, you know, and so I want to, before we just, to preface this, let me just say to people, whatever the situation in your marriage, you've married that person's past as well. And it's your job to facilitate healing from their past, not to take advantage. That's really what the marriage relationship is about. It's about bringing healing and wholeness to that other person. So if you've married a person that's broken, was abused, or in some way, you know, a wife that says she needs sex three times a day is not a healthy thing. And you're in a position where it's your job not to take advantage, but to help her heal. And if you're with a spouse that doesn't want to touch sex, rather than, you know, trying to bully them into submission, you know, you're there to try to heal their past. That's your job, not to enjoy sex. But, you know, that's not why we get married. We get married for healing. And that's God's purpose. So how to deal with this situation. So I've got six things. Of course, they're not exhaustive because every time a different couple comes in, it's a whole different ballgame.
Well, we might have to kind of high point these this week. Maybe we can expand this on another show, but kind of tell us these six points in general.
You can't legislate arousal. You know, so if the man attempts to legislate arousal, it's tantamount to rape. I mean, a man can get can be prepared for sex if the woman's not, but you can't. So the reality is that you have to go if a woman tries to legislate it, she's just going to go backwards. It's just going to, because, you know, anxiety and all those things are blockers to dopamine and that. So if the woman tries to tell the husband, come on, get excited, it's just going to go back the other direction. The reality is that you have to move along. The pace is set by the most timid. And so number two is there can be improvement. Sure, yeah, hope for improvement, plan for improvement, work to plan for improvement. But people don't change very much. And so the more you try to force the issue, the worse it's going to get. And again, you know, fear and shame and anxiety or dopamine blockers.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a proper view of what sex should be. In order to do that, set your affections on things above. We are kind of going through these quickly. Communication about what works and what's acceptable, it might seem like it takes away from the freedom and spontaneity, but it's a good reality check, and seeing your resistance to that kind of communication could be a barometer to how bad things are. Work on the love triad. Trust, forgiveness, and communion. You're not going to wind up with a Hollywood model, but that's not what we're after. Lastly, sex therapy might be in order.
Is there such a thing as Christian sex therapy?
Christian sex therapy, I think certainly there can be, because you have a biblical purpose and a biblical model to go toward. But a lot of sex therapy will be the same. But I think the secular world is going to tell you, do whatever you can do to enjoy it. And you may be going the wrong direction. You may be worrying. You may be working against some of these family of origin things. And once again, your job is not just to enjoy this. Your job is healing. And so that's where
sex therapy. It seems like they would probably deal more with just techniques and things, but it's so much more deeper.
There's some of that, but we really, as Christians, need to keep our eye on the purpose of the relationship and let the other things. Let sex be what it can be. After we've prioritized that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, a big subject here, we might explore this more in a future broadcast. If people need some help with their marriage and relationship issues, how do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
By phone at 425-778-6169, and then can email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
You have offices in Edmonds
and Bellevue.
Mm-hmm. And again, these shows are podcast at the BibleBasedCounselor.com website. Always great stuff with Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor on Sound Mind.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.